It is a pleasure to welcome our next guest. It's an honor to have him with us. Larry Lester joins us, and if you look for one of the experts in baseball with an expertise in Negro League baseball, and he is the man. He really is. Larry was one of the founders of the Negro League's Baseball Museum in Kansas City, served as its research director and treasurer for 5 years, instrumental in development of the museum's business plan and its incorporation in 1990. He has won every major award that Sabre puts out for greatness in journalism and things like that. And I thought this weekend he's got a book that has been out, and I wanted to promote it as well. But with Jackie Robinson weekend happening, and we've been highlighting it all today, Larry Lester, it's a pleasure to have you with us today. How are you?
Oh, great, Marty. Thank you for having me on your show.
Really? And I don't know if I did you justice in that introduction, because I could go on for about two pages of the things you've accomplished. How did you get involved in this area? How did it all come about?
Well, I just grew up in an all-black neighborhood, went to an all-black church, all-black school, and I live about five blocks from the ballpark, Municipal Stadium, home of the Kansas City A's. And when I would go there, I would see mostly white men playing baseball. So I would ask the question, where are all the black guys? Because in my small world, everybody was black. So they would tell me that there were black guys in the Negro baseball leagues, something I had never heard of, and tell me great stories about Cool Papa Bell, Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, and other Negro League stars. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible. I need to find out more. But I didn't really believe what they had to say about these great athletes until I got much older and discovered Robert Peterson's book in 1970, Only the Ball is White. And it changed my life that these men actually existed, and I needed to do some work in that area.
Well, you've done a great job. The book we have here is Black Baseball in New York City, but you've done so many other things. Some of the things I've learned that I didn't know, that a black baseball team went to Japan in the 20s. You know, we have this image of Babe Ruth going there and Lefty O'Doul and Connie Mack taking teams in the 30s and Mo Berg, the spy, and all that. But the black teams went in the early 20s and knocked the heck out of the Japanese players.
Yes, a fellow by the name of Lonnie Goodwin took the Philadelphia team over there in 1927. And the Japanese Times, which is written in English, reported that the black teams were very respectful. They were not a carnival act like Babe Ruth. They would bow when they came onto the field and played the game under the rules. And that created a great respect for the black ball players and encouraged the Japanese to develop their skill set. So it was a game changer for the Japanese people that, unlike how they were treated by the white teams, the black teams respected them and try to play hard and not be, you know, globetrotterish or burlesque type show. So it was a game changer for the Japanese nation.
Boy, amazing. Larry Lester joins us. Larry, it's a pleasure to have you here with us. The other thing that I learned about, of course, in the Dominican Republic, and, of course, I learned how baseball got to these countries through the military and the Marines, and they would be teaching the so-called, quotes, American way of, you know, and then they'd come in and get the little towns playing against each other, and then somehow we would be involved with their government. Well, it certainly happened like that with Trujillo in the Dominican Republic, and I'm just learning about Satchel Paige being part of Trujillo's all-star team in the 30s, and Satchel better win or else there would have been trouble, and Trujillo was that kind of dictator.
Yes, they put him in the jail the night before the game so they wouldn't you know, play around at night, and because this game was very important to the dictator Trujillo. He had to win this game so he could win the election and remain dictator. And Satchel didn't start out too good in that game, but he got it together, and they won the game, you know, with armed soldiers around the field to, you know, squelch any disturbance that may have come about if Trujillo's All-Stars had lost that game. And they had a very, very talented team in 1937, but they struggled, you know, so much pressure on them.
Well, it's an amazing story. We have an author coming on in a few weeks, Ace Smith, who did a book about Satchel and that whole event of being in down there. Orlando Cepeda is a dear friend of mine, and he's recovering and he's in rehab from the heart attack and things like that.
But oh boy!
I saw Orlando just a couple of days ago, and I asked him about Artie Wilson and what a great player Artie Wilson was, and Artie Wilson meant so much to Orlando. And you'll tell us a little bit about Artie Wilson. But the main thing he said was his dad, of course, the Bull, Orlando's the baby Bull. When he grew up, Cool Papa Bell, Josh Gibson, Satchel Paige would be in his living room because players could go to Puerto Rico, could go to Cuba and play during the winter. But Orlando would tell me about those stories. And it's something for everyone to know that as we celebrate Jackie, you know, breaking the alleged color line here in 47, players were going through the Caribbean and entertaining and being tremendous players well before that.
Oh, of course. They were stars in Cuba and Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, all the islands. They were welcome, and the best of the best black stars went there. So when you combine that talent with Latino ball players, it was an awesome team full of talent. You know, white ball players also went there. So it was the best talent in the world, not just on the mainland. So to look at those lineups, you're like, wow, it's just an incredibly rich game in the Caribbean.
Well, it's
wish you could have been there.
Yeah, no, it's amazing the influence. And we don't look at to see, you know, these were men who were outstanding players. And it took Jackie Robinson somehow to legitimize it, which never should have come to that. But Orlando said Orlando was the bat boy for a team that had Clemente on it. You know that kind of stuff. So it's nice to chat with you about some of these things. Larry Lester is with us. His book is Black Baseball in New York City. Beautiful pictures of the history of black baseball, 1885 through 1959. Artie Wilson, I'll throw one other name out at you because we're going to have Galen White on shortly. He did the book Smiles and Singles. And Artie Wilson played out here for Oakland and was a batting champion of the PCL. And he was a New York Giant shortstop, tremendous player with the Birmingham Black Barons as well. And he was with the Giants when Willie Mays was called up and Artie went back. Artie said, no, I got to play all the time. Send me back and bring Willie up. And that's how Willie got up to the Giants in 51. But Artie Wilson would get 200 hits and 190 of them would be singles. So I said to Orlando on Thursday, I said, Artie Wilson, and all he said was left side. He hit everything. That's all he said. He said you couldn't get him out. He hit everything to the left side. But he's one of those other names of New York baseball and certainly Pacific Coast League baseball. Very important man. The second African-American, I believe, to play in the PCL.
Yeah, that's true. After John Richardson.
Right.
A little trivia note, Artie Wilson was the last 400 hitter in the Negro League.
That's right.
And I'm reading Smiles and Singles right now by Galen. Very, very nice work done by Galen. And I knew Artie, complete gentleman. Always professional. And he talked about hitting to the left side. Artie was a left-handed hitter, and they would put a shift on him, and he would still hit the ball to the left side. So he was more kind of a slapstick hitter like a Rod Carew or Ichiro for comparison purposes. But they couldn't stop him.
No, he's unbelievable. It's a very good book. We're going to have Galen on in a few weeks. Larry, let's talk about Jackie a little bit, and that's one of the main reasons I want you on today and let the world know what Jackie accomplished, and thank goodness baseball has embraced it, and each year it gets a little bit more involved, and everyone wears number 42, but there's so many people who don't know about Jackie. You tell us, in your words, what Jackie meant to the world, to America, and why this man is maybe one of the greatest of the 20th century?
Well, that's a tough question. To to me, he was a mentor, a role model before we could define role models. He was part of a civil rights movement before we coined the term civil rights movement. And, you know, him and many others that came along right after him, Willie Mays and Hank Thompson and Artie Wilson and others, were father figures to me before we had Father's Day. So Jackie was unique in that he had to shoulder all the responsibility of his race and breaking the color barrier. And that's what makes him so unique in history. If he had failed, then integration of the national pastime may have been stalled. It may have eventually happened, but not on his watch. And so there's so much I could say about Mr. Robinson having to confront segregation, and some teammates, he was not welcomed by some teammates, and he was always threatened on the road. But, you know, sometimes money triumphs humanity, and that's what happened with Jackie, and they could see that he could bring the fans in that first year. That, I mean, I know the Dodgers had a franchise attendance record of 1.8 million fans, and they broke single game attendance records at every ballpark on the road except Cincinnati's Crosley Field. And at home, they had a $1.9 million franchise attendance record. So this is, you know, this prompted Wendell Smith, the Pittsburgh Courier, to write, "Jackie's nimble, Jackie's quick, Jackie's making the turnstiles click."
Very good.
Yeah, so Jackie had a big influence because he got into their pockets. You look at the first game of that 47 World Series against the Yankees. More than 70,000 people bought tickets to see Jackie Robinson play. We're talking about Cotton Bowl, Sugar Bowl, college football attendance-like numbers. And they spent over $300,000 to see Jackie make that debut at Yankee Stadium. So maybe Branch Rickey was a savvy businessman and humanitarian at the same time. So the truth is somewhere in the middle there. Was he trying to pad his pockets, or did he really believe that it was time to integrate the game? I think it's more of the latter.
Yeah, a little bit of both for him, though. He liked the turnstiles to click because then he would make more money. And,
yes.
And he built up that farm system, and whenever he needed somebody, he'd sell Chico Carrasquel or Dee Fondi or Preston Ward or Sam Jethro.
Oh, my goodness.
He would just sell them and get the money. That's what Branch Rickey liked, until he ran into Walter O'Malley.
Bringing back memories now.
Yeah, who said, "I want some of that money, too." And that was the end of Branch Rickey with the Dodgers. But,
yeah,
it's wonderful to have you on and talk to you about these things. And, you know, Lester Rodney was someone I had on the show years ago. And,
of course,
a wonderful sports writer for the Daily Worker and one of the first advocates for the integration of baseball.
Uh-huh.
And he told me, and we'll end sort of with this, that Campy told him, he said, "Lester, there never would have been Brown versus the Board of Education when it came up without Jackie in 47. So I always remembered that Lester told me, quoting Roy Campanella.
Yeah, and I agree with Lester Rodney, one of my heroes. You know, he wrote for the New York Daily Worker,
right,
communist newspaper. I read every editorial that he ever printed. And I believe that we have to think about how Jackie integrated baseball. This baseball was the first institution in this country to be legally integrated. And what Lester is saying is Jackie integrated this institution before America was legally integrated. So we didn't become legally integrated until 1954, Brown versus the Board of Education, Topeka Board of Education. So that's why Jackie's barrier breaker debut in 47 is so history-making. I mean, we had no institutions, nothing in this country where two races were playing on the same level playing field, so to speak.
Boy, beautifully said, Larry. Beautifully said. Larry Lester, beautifully said. And I'm so happy to have you on today, and we welcome you back anytime. And It's a pleasure to talk to you about Jackie and about America in those days and what it meant. So I appreciate you being on.
Well, thank you very much, and good luck against those Padres tonight.
Boy, come on. You got to score first. Give me three runs at least. Huh? My goodness.
Yeah, I know. It was rough last night.
I know. Well, at least you got Ohtani to watch tomorrow, so you'll have some fun in Kansas City. Larry, thank you so much, as always. And as I said, I hope we did justice for you. You're one of the great ones in the country, so I appreciate you being on.
I appreciate the invite, Marty.
All right.
Have a great show.
Thank you. Thank you. That's Larry Lester. Boy, nice to have on. Raph, that's one of our best. Very nice. All right, more coming up on the Sports Leader.